I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
Wakanda!
I love that shit. Y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So, little disclaimer, Lisa Bolakaja is out today. But we got two of my dudes in the house. Our big bro, Paul Gio, co-EP on NCIS, NOLA.
Hello there.
And then we got my man from the writing directing team, the Derek brothers, Chris Derek. What's up, Chris?
Not much. Just here today, a new day.
I call him Cinechris.
Cinechris. Oh, no. Damn.
That's going to stick now.
He did not like to be called a cinephile, but he's the epitome of a goddamn cinephile. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you a story. You know, it's interesting.
Here's a story.
Let me tell you a story about a film from Denmark in 1967.
This has to do with what you were saying before about you would eat to kind of self-medicate.
Right.
I watch movies to do that. I would like consume them when I'm like feeling bad. You know, or I mean, that's the main reason why you look better than I do. But it's the main reason why I've seen a lot of things because right. It's like, yeah. I mean, like last night I saw three movies because I was like upset.
Three movies?
I was upset about something. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this. And then I went through and I was like, you know, what else is up? And then what else? And then next thing you know,
I think that's how I became a writer is my escape from my childhood, which was less than satisfying, was movies. And TV shows, and I just dove into those worlds because then I didn't have to deal with my world because those worlds were cooler and nicer and better and you know more exciting. And
I watched a lot of fucked up shit last night, so there was nothing exciting and cool. Just like
as a kid, that was it.
You're never gonna watch that stuff as a kid, but yeah, I watched some depressing ass.
You know what? We've been binging The Holiday. We've been watching The Crown. That shit is just
You know what? I have to be so careful on what I watch now because after Paul fucked me over watching BoJack Horseman shit.
What?
Hell, man. It's great. People are gonna it's an amazing show.
Yeah, people are going to think now that show. It's horrible.
It's fucking amazing. I said you fucked me over because I was watching too much of it. I was like, I told you in the season three, man, it fucked me up. I'm not going to spoil it, but it fucked me up.
All the way to season three already?
Yeah.
Damn. It's my favorite television show since The Wire.
I was upset.
Yes, I'm using The Wire and BoJack Horseman in the same sentence.
Look at it. I'm going to have to get back on. I watched the pilot. I am
way into else is here.
So the pilot in that, like it's the first maybe four episodes of the first season are just they kind of feel standalone-ish, I think.
They were trying to find the show, they didn't know.
And about halfway in they figured it out and it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's addictive as hell. The funny thing I love is like hearing voices that I'm going, who the fuck is that? Who's this? I know that voice.
What's great is there's a lot of famous people doing voices on it, and yet they don't promote that at all. They don't use it to say like, hey, come listen to, Jessica Lange do a thing on, but you know, it's just, they're just them.
Yeah. Cause they'll spoof themselves on some level, you know, like, there was one episode, I think season two when Naomi Watts actually played herself, but played herself as kind of like a sex addict type of person or something like that. It was funny. And then, you know, what's his name? Fucking, I love it. He plays, Cuddly Whiskers. Jeffrey Wright plays. Right. It's just like, I was like, who's that voice? I know that voice.
He's got a great voice.
And he's awesome. But that show, man,
That's what's up. So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get into the show. So today, we got a couple young baby riders sitting in with us today, listening. So I was like, we got my man Paul Gio in the house. We got Chris there. We got myself. Let's do some questions from the baby riders. So let's start it off. Introduce yourself, and then let's go ahead and start it off. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. My name is Shanae Austin. I'm a writer. I write film and TV, but my main goal is working TV as a writer.
Cool.
So my question is to Paul or any of you guys.
Start it off with Paul. That's cool.
How do you guys, because one of my things that I struggle with every day is to write every day. Like, I tend to procrastinate.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys keep that motivation or to get up every day and write for 30 minutes to an hour, you know, and keep that schedule or to keep
good question.
The discipline, whatever.
Okay.
That's a great question.
Go ahead, Paul.
Me?
Yeah. She said, Paul. She didn't want to know nothing about from us. So go on ahead, Paul.
No, it's a fantastic question because it's one of the things that I think everyone battles with, writers, and discipline is so important. Like, it's in a lot of ways, it's more important than talent. And I've talked on the show before about this thing that I learned from Josh Waitkins, who, mm-hmm. you ever see a movie called Searching for Bobby Fischer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the kid that movie's about, Josh Waitkins, the real life chess champion kid. So he grew up, you know, he became the world chess champion at whatever young age. And then he got out of that and he moved on and he was like, you know, what am I going to do next? And he stumbled past this martial arts school and he thought, wow, that looks cool. I'm going to go try that. And he walked in and kind of fell in love with it. And he's like, I wonder if I could be a world champion in this too. And 2 years later, he was in Thailand fighting for the world championship.
2 years later.
And so
he was in there all day long.
So he wrote this book about called The Art of Learning, and he's been on some podcasts and stuff. And what I got, and this is his thing, that's why I bring him up, because I didn't invent this. But there's this thing, and especially if you're a morning person, or if you can make yourself a morning person, the most productive I've ever been, and I got this from him, and other people that have heard this and done it. I haven't heard one person yet tell me it doesn't work. When you wake up in the morning, the first thing we all do is like check our phone, you know, check mm-hmm. email, check text, check whatever. Well, the second you do that, you're putting your brain into a reactive place. You're reacting to things. And so then to go and try and be creative and to start and to become proactive in your mind and your creativity, you've just set yourself back so much farther because you've got to siphon through all the stuff you've just poured into your head right. in that first 15 minutes of looking at everything. So what he did and what I have done is first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, like when I go to sleep at night, my phone goes into airplane mode and I don't take it out of airplane mode. And when I wake up until I get up and I do my coffee, shower, whatever thing, and I sit down and I write and I make sure I don't stop for 90 minutes and before I ever check my phone or check my email or everything.
That's discipline.
And it's hard to do. Right. I started and stopped when I heard this and I was like, I'm going to try it.
Mm-hmm.
I started and stopped like three different times, but it's muscle memory. It's like working out. Once you commit to it and after you do it like four mornings in a row, five mornings in a row, that's all it'll take and you will see results that quickly. That first couple mornings you're going to sit there and like, what am I going to write? What am I writing? I'm sitting here. And it's like, just write anything. Sit there and type, I don't know what the hell to write right now and I'm sitting here doing this thing and I really want to check my phone but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
Just that act. You don't have to sit there and be like writing your actual piece, screenplay or whatever. But you get yourself into that mode, and it is, for me, it was amazing how different and how quickly my production shot up. Like how I was able, then my brain, I started waking up. I was waking up already thinking about story and stuff and just started cranking out. And that's what I did at the end of 2015, into the Black 22s thing and all through that. And then I quit doing it. quit doing it last year. I got this job, and I was like, oh, I got this job. And I go to work, and I get up in the morning, and I work on my stuff. But I quit doing it. Didn't write a thing. You weren't in here earlier with another podcast we talked about that I didn't write a single thing for myself in 2017. I was working on a show, and I was getting paid, and it was great. Didn't write anything for myself. That was one of the things I stopped doing. I started doing it again like 8 or 9 days ago. And I just told Hilliard, I've written more in the last 8 days than I did in the previous 6 months. And for me, that's one little tiny thing. Everybody has different things, but as far as discipline and how do you do it, that's what I have found that's worked for me better than anything.
I would say for me, I mean, I'm a naturally disciplined person by nature. It just kind of comes, whether it's what I eat, whether it's me going to the gym, whether it's, you know, me staying faithful to my husband. It's easy for me.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's super hard for me, so it's different. Yeah.
I'm just want to never drink, never smoke, never do drugs. I mean, I'm just disciplined, right? So
if you don't do drugs, why is this cocaine? No, I'm just kidding.
It ain't really coke. Coke is the ghetto version. And so for me, it's a little easier for me. However, what I have to fight, I'll use this as an example. I was telling Paul in the previous episode about how 2017 was a difficult year for me. And you know, Sinead, we've talked a couple of times. You know, I lost some big jobs that it really kind of mentally destroyed me. And picking up my usual way of writing has been really, really difficult. For instance, I would come in here at like 10 in the morning and be here till 10 at night, usually. Now I get in here at 12 or 1, and I'm here till about 5 or 6.
And I bet you're more productive.
Well, no. Not necessarily.
Okay.
But so I'm working lesser hours, but I'm pushing through it, right? What I found is, to really get to answer your question is, you have to find the time of the day where you get the most bang for your buck. For me, my most bang is between 11 and about 5 or 6 o'clock for me, right?
That's a really good point.
Really. Because if you don't, and me and your brother Will talked about this too, if you don't and you're forcing yourself to write in times that you can't write, you're not really productive. So if I get up at 8:30 and I go to the gym and I'm back here by 11 or noon, I'm ready to go. So I have a good 5 hours, 4 to 5 hours where I'm strong. After that, I'm not 100%.
That's a really good point. Because like that thing I said, for me, like I'm have always been at my best in the morning for whatever reason. And I'm not good. Like I am worthless afternoons and early evenings. I can write at night. I can write late at night and stuff. And I can write early mornings. But I think that's a really good point.
Right, but see, all of our bodies are different. Like I can't be sitting up writing at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's not me. I need
that's
to get
my
up,
brother.
Patrick, yo, brother, right? Yes. But see, that's me. You have to know your body. I'm the type of person. For me, like Paul said, your body is your temple. You missed a little bit of that. We're talking about you also have to take care of your body as an artist, right? So for me, I know I got to get to bed at least by midnight, so I could be up by 8:30, which is late for a lot of motherfuckers, but that's my schedule. I need 8-9 hours of sleep, right? And then I get up, do my shit, go to the gym, and then I'm here, right? Now, here's the interesting. Here we are in my office on the lot. I don't go outside. Once I'm here, I don't go on the internet. You know, I turn off everything.
Yeah.
You have
well,
to
there's
figure
the correlation
out.
To what I was right. saying. That's once you right. get in that zone.
You have to, because otherwise you're just checking in whatever and see what's my phone's on, because I might get a call, whatever might be important, but I'm not that's why I don't tweet enough. That's why we don't have 9,000 people on our Twitter. I don't have time. You know what I mean? We talked about this. And so for me, you have to decide what is your schedule and how do you make it work. And for you guys, you probably have 9-to-5 jobs, which is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maneuver having a 9-to-5 and squeezing time to work when you've been working all fucking day?
That's how I am, too. Like, right. I work a lot, and it's just like...
A little closer.
Like, I work a lot, whatever, and I come home, and I be exhausted and tired. And I don't like writing anything at all, you know. Like, my schedule varies. It's like I'm either go work at 10 o'clock in the morning... I get up like around 5 or 6, or sometimes I operate I knew it's 8 p.m. It's just
you're just trying to find those moments.
Yeah, it's so hard.
So like I schedule my day very rigorously. I do it the night before I get into bed. I have this thing called the best self planner. It breaks every hour down into half hour things, and I just like plan it out. And then I'm like saying, okay, here's my blocks I'm going to write. And a lot of times, like, I got to work a lot during the day too and, like, make money. So I get up early and maybe spend a half hour, you know, writing. And then, like, I can't write, like, write between, like, 3:30 and 5. My mind is, like, always wanting to do everything else then. Errands, I just can't focus. So, but I know that about myself. Mm-hmm. So that's like my time where I'm going to do it, calls, emails, fuck around, all that kind of stuff. But it's like, if for a long time, I used to have to work these jobs. It's like I'd get up and I would write. And I also write at lunch because to me, it's about planning. Right. To me, it's like if you sit down at the blank page and you're like, oh, what am I going to do today? Then you're kind of lost. But it's like I get up and I already know what the scene that I'm trying to work on, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So when I get out of the shower, I'm thinking about that scene in the shower. I'm talking the dialogue out in my head. What is this? Shower, boom, get out, sit down. And I maybe have 15 minutes before I really got to go. And then I just write it out. Boom, and there it is. And it might not be good. And I might take it and I might send it to myself on the phone. And then at the job, I'll look at it at lunch and email and rewrite it a little bit because I was telling you I use that because like mm-hmm. I don't use Final Draft to write it first or fade in whatever. I use something else, and then I just come back. And then a lot of times I think people fail to think that if you're rewriting something, that's still you working on your stuff. Right. It's like a lot of times if you don't feel like you have the spark to create the new page, the new scene, the old scene. Should get revisited. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's me. Some people don't like to rewrite like as they're writing. They want to get it all out and then come back and rewrite. That's not how I worked out. Right. But that's my mind.
I'd say the majority of people probably go back and
clean what up. I would say too, and this is super direct and sometimes
keep it real with them.
People don't like how direct I am, but I don't think there's anything more important than truth to tell people when they're trying to get to a place you're at. And like exactly what you just said is such a huge problem for so many that, I got to get paid. I got to have a 9-to-5 job. I got to work. And when am I going to do this? And there's two really quick things I'll say. It's funny because I tweeted about this recently before the whole tweet storm thing of the last episode. Mm-hmm. But I tweeted out that if you wake up 30 minutes earlier every day than you normally do, just 30 minutes every, that's over the course of 1 year, that's more than 182 hours of writing time.
That's a lot.
Just setting that alarm 30 minutes earlier and spending that 30 minutes of your day before you have to go to your job, before you have to feed your dog, before you got to do whatever, that's that. And then the other thing, it's a quick little anecdotal thing is, we lost an author recently, this woman, Sue Grafton, who was a super prolific.
When did she die?
She died.
When? Recently?
Last week, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's one of the most successful mystery novelists of all time. Her series was called the ABC series because her first book was A is for Alibi, and the next book was B is for Something. And she went like all the way through the alphabet
all the way
and
through.
Started again. Yeah, you started know, again. M is for Murder. And,
that's crazy.
But her thing. She wrote her first three novels being a full-time mom with a job. And what she did and how she wrote those is she got up in the morning before her kids had to get ready for school and everything, and she went and she sat in her laundry room with her typewriter on her knees, on her thighs, and wrote three freaking novels.
Typewriter, too. Heavy ass.
Okay, so you know what?
It's
electric and shit.
It's discipline. It's right. Like, that's how bad do you want it?
How bad do you want it?
And that, like, I heard that and I was like, okay, I can't ever make the excuse again. I don't have time.
That was the other little point that I was going to say, but I was trying to be nice about it. But
yeah,
I see where, I see Paul's here. I forgot. Is to keep it real, we were talking previously about how I keep my body right, It's the same thing with my writing. I use the fact that I'm insecure, that I'm surrounded by all my friends who are on shows, who have whatever, to keep pushing through. How do I make it so I'm not sitting at home cradled up on my bed while I'm depressed? I want to still push and get where my friends are going. Keep on, you know, use it as a positive is what I'm doing. You know what I mean? So that's what I've learned to do so that, and you've been with me at a couple of events. You see all the people that we know. You want to let their success inspire you. You know, I go to the gym and I watch, you know, freaking some of the supermodels or whatever who are on TV shows or whatever. And I'm like, how the fuck is he lifting that weight? And I'm like, see, I gotta do this again. You use it in whatever way you can do it to inspire you. You know, you see people with the things you want. You push yourself to do the things that they do and more. See, that's the thing. The other thing that pushes me, and I was going to hold off and keep it real. Black folks, we got to be better than them. I'm just going to be real with you.
Yep.
They only give us one motherfucking chance, yeah. Period. So that alone should be making you push. That alone should be making, yeah. And that's why
if Jeff Thorne was here, he'd be going in right now.
Well, yeah, well, I think it was Jeff who was saying, or it might have been you, it was like, you know, watch, you know, like one less movie or watch one less television show. Like, you have the time and you have to write better, always thinking that you can do better, that you will do better. That's different than thinking I can't do it or like I'm a fraud at this. It's that this can be better.
Right.
This can always be better. And the thing, you know, like those people always say with everything, with like arts and stuff like that, they have to pry it out of your hands when you got to give it in, you know. Or do some guys say, you know, like the movie's done at the moment that you have to abandon it because you can't, you just, because if not, you'd keep working on it. Like, there's always this fascinating fucking story that I wanted to ask this guy one time to confirm, but it was like Stanley Kubrick was, he would fucking re-edit some of his movies.
Really?
I was like, what the fuck story is this? I can't believe this shit. But I was like, he would re-edit because it's like, did I get it right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, his fucking masterpieces.
And another thing, this is much more of a very practical, hands-on thing, is I think a lot of times too, and I don't know if this is your situation, but I know with a lot of younger writers, you feel like, you know, you're thinking, wake up a half hour earlier. Well, sometimes it takes me a half hour to even start to think, what am I going to write? What am I going to? And if you, again, got to be super honest with yourself and take a very hard, honest look and like, what do you want to do? If you have this web series and you know that there's writing that needs to be done for that, or if you have this screenplay that you've just been floating around in your mind, like, I'm going to write that. What a huge mistake I think a lot of newer writers make is they start writing too early. Mm. Is mm. like, don't sit down and type fade in until you have thought and thought and thought about that script and you have written out, you know, a whole bunch of notes and pro stuff and done little mini treatments and outlined and then written. And outlines suck. But then you take the outline and you write it over again and you go through it again and you go through it again. Don't type fade in too early, because I think that can be so demoralizing at times.
Hell yeah.
Because you get to a point, you know, anybody can write the first 10 pages of a screenplay and you're like, this is awesome. And then you sit there and 9 months later, you're going like, I still have...
I'm on page 34.
Yeah. And it's like, what happened? Because you started too early. And so if you're... When you have a life that has a full-time job and you don't have, you know, the ability to just spend your entire day on it, is whether it's waking up half hour early, whether it's doing Hilliard's thing and finding that specific time of the day that you know that you're the most creative and have that time, even if you can't sit down when that 30-minute clock starts ticking and be writing your web series episode and start writing dialogue and stuff, write something.
Right.
And I speak from experience on this, and I never did this early in my career, and I do it now all the time. Writing anything is so much better than not write. You know, you can edit a bad page. You can't edit a blank page. Right. And
That's a shirt.
And I will write. I will write stuff that has nothing to do with what I'm working on at the moment, you know. But it's just to get that brain going, to get that, you know, it's like Hilliard, if he goes into the gym, you know, on leg day or whatever, I'm sure you don't suddenly throw on 300 pounds right away and start pressing. Yeah. Like you work up to it. Yeah. Right. You start moving, you get those muscles warm, you start stretch. Lifting. Yeah.
Right.
And that's what, like, I have a journal just like his, and a lot of times, like I said, that 90 minutes I start my day with, a lot of times the actual words that are coming down onto the paper are not the project I'm working on, but I'm writing, you know, even if I'm like, if I was sitting in here and, you know, nobody was in here and Hilliard texted me and said, hey, I'm going to be like 40 minutes late, just chill. I wouldn't just be sitting here looking on Twitter and stuff. I'd pull out my book and I'd just be writing. And even if it's literally writing like, what is this weird ass 1970s white shag carpet he's got on his desk? Like, what, you know, like anything.
Just a pimp.
As
a pimp
long
thing.
As
you
you're as long as you're writing, it is this creative muscle. And I think it's a trap that a lot of newer writers fall into, is like they feel like, well, they can't start writing until it's something very specific, until it's like draft 4 of the screenplay or something. And that's a lie. That's, you know, write anything and don't start writing your thing too early, you know? Make your notes, make your outline. If you're writing a web series, start thinking about that. Craft it out. What do I want to do with this character over these 6 episodes? They're going to be what, 10 pages each or 24 pages right. each, whatever it is. Just start thinking like, what could I do with that? Oh, I could do this. I could do this. What if she goes over here?
You're exactly right, Paul. I was telling a writer just the other day about before I went on my vacation that we were talking about the Tulsa script. They were like, man, how long did you take you to write that? I said, it took me about 3 weeks to write the script. It took me about 6 months of research and notes. I probably have 400 or 500 pages of notes. And I'm not exaggerating.
I'm not exaggerating even a little bit. You have to do so. That's the thing I think people, like Paul, you're so on it about writing too early. You know, there's a really famous Billy Wilder quote about third act problems come from the first act. So if you were writing that first 10 pages because you got it, because it's fast, you actually made a mistake, because that the first 10 pages are so critical to setting everything. Right. Everything else is going to dictate from that. You write it too early, you messed up. There's so many things that aren't going to be in the screenplay that you got to know. Mm-hmm. That you gotta have worked out and kind of figure out how they'll be subtext in the screenplay. That is really what makes your movie work, and that's what you gotta figure out ahead of time. You can go back and figure that out afterwards. That's when the rewrite process becomes like this nightmare, because you're just like, what the fuck is wrong, and why is it not working, and it's not affecting people the right way, because you haven't done the work ahead of time to know who your people are. Like, what's his name? Leonard Chang, has this thing.
I love Leonard Chang.
He put this thing on his page about like how he creates his characters. Mm-hmm. It's maybe like 20 or 30 different kind of things he wants to know about them. Like what was their first kiss? Mm-hmm. Things like this to know, because that just lets you know the person more. So when you are writing them, then you're not worrying about, what's he going to say here? What would he say here? You know, because you kind of know that.
You're exactly right, because I just had a writer in here the other day, and he brought me his outline to just read the first couple of pages. And I started reading, and I says, so she works at a corporate office. What kind of office is it? She said, oh, it's just corporate. I said, no.
Have you worked at a corporate office?
Have you figured out what it is she does? Like, what's so special about her? Don't just put her in an office. The ability she has, you put her there for a reason, so that's going to help her later, right? Oh, am I supposed to do that? Yes, motherfucker.
Yeah, yes. That's it.
There's a reason.
That's the first 10 pages.
Right,
ten,
you know what I mean?
Like the first 10, I mean, if you're writing movies, if you look at the first 10 pages, if the first 10 pages of any movie, 10, 15 pages, it's so much a battle of real estate.
Right.
To say so much, you know, and do it with like the brevity on the page, but leave the right amount of mystery so the audience wants to be invested and follow to peel back the onions more. It's such a complicated thing that you have to really, you got to keep thinking it out. And then people don't realize, see, when it's really good, when it's so good, it looks easy.
Yeah.
That's the fucking trap. That right. is the trap.
Right.
Like, I remember one time I was talking with this actor one time. It was about 10 years ago. And he was like, okay, so just like name me a movie that I should watch. I was like, well, you need to watch The Verdict.
Mm.
He's like, why? He was like, why? I was like, just watch what the fuck Paul Newman does with right. the sink. He's like, huh? What do you mean? I was like, watch the movie
right.
and watch the sink scene.
Right.
Then and then you'll understand. And he watched the movie and he was like, where was the scene with the sink? And I was like, what? What are you talking about? That's like, you know, like this, like, and I was like, because he makes it look so easy.
Right.
You're not even watching what he's doing.
Right.
It's just happening.
It's subtle.
Just happening.
Right. There's a great, Mazin and August, one of their Script Notes podcasts, they break down Unforgiven. Did you hear that episode?
Heard it. Mm-hmm.
Great episode. Fantastic episode.
They said they're going to do more of those in 2018.
Yeah, so. And I was yelling at them on Twitter. I was like, you got to do more of those, man. Yeah. They're so good. But they talk about a movie, you know, they tell everybody, you know, a movie that they tell you beforehand, hey, we're going to do this. Everybody watches a movie. And then they post the screenplay online so you can look at it, and they break it down in the episode. And they were talking about the brilliance of that script is that in the first 8 pages of that script, you have met 10 characters – and you know them.
Yeah.
It's staggering. And they were, and I was listening to this podcast and I'm like, what? No. Yeah. And I went, and so I was listening to it while I was driving. I got back and I opened up, you know, downloaded and I looked at the screenplay and I was like, wow.
Is that like, right. Who's that? Like David Webb Peoples?
David Webb Peoples. And it's like, but to get to that, I guarantee you, I don't know the guy. I don't know anything about it, but I know those weren't the first 8 pages he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
that was he was able to do it that easy and that simple because I bet he had busted his ass on outlines and
got 10 characters. Right. 10 right. characters. You got to figure out. Because see, I think the thing that people don't really, you know, both these things, TV and film, you have a finite page count. And you have to know that everyone is getting bored, and so your job is really to draw someone from page to page to page. That is when I think like Don Winslow was always saying, your fear as a writer is that you might lose someone, on any sentence you can lose someone.
They get bumped.
Yeah, right. And it's like that. I mean, that's where writers who are young, who write movies. And their TV when they're writing the teaser, like haven't figured out that it's like you got to do so much and so little, and the space will creep up on you so fast. You're like, fuck, that was page 10, and I haven't done enough yet. In your head, you know, I got to do all this stuff. How do I do it? I got to find places where I got to change lines to. The line's got to change here to say this because it's got to inform me about him. It's got to be one line as opposed to a scene. There's so much work you got to do in writing a screenplay or the TV thing too. Whatever it is, you just got to do so much work. And when it's good, it was good. You didn't even realize it, and that's what's.
But scary. I think the critical point to what he's saying is to. Get to that, because that sounds daunting and overwhelming, what he just said. Like, oh my God, how am I going to do all that? And I think the key is, again, not writing it too early. Do all the stretching, you know? Mm-hmm. Do all your character notes and stuff and story notes and thoughts and things. Just write all that. Write outline after outline. Write really, really badly.
That's why I struggle with the most is write an outline and be sheets. Like, I never... It frustrates me a lot because I'm not used to writing. I'm just so used to going into fade in,
right,
and just writing it. And
right, because that's the fun part. And yeah, it's like you got it, but you've got
to learn and enjoy outlining.
It's the Stephen King thing. You got to write the first part stuff with the door closed. You know, like write stuff, those beat sheets and everything for nobody else. No one will see it but you, and just convince yourself of that so it can be as horrible as it can be. Right. You should see. The stuff I'm doing for one of these movies I'm writing out, like, I've got different fonts on
stuff.
They're
all over the
place.
Like,
I've got, I've just, like,
it's for you.
No one would understand it. Like, is that a treatment? Is that an out? What the hell is this thing? And it's like, but for me, it's just, I'm vomiting out all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then from that clay, I'm going to mold the story.
Because it's a machine. It's a machine. It's like a clockwork. everything you got to kind of like figure
is it,
out.
Is it orange? Pieces.
No, it's you have to like figure it out like piece by piece, and that's where it becomes. It's I don't know. It's
well, let's easy. Let's introduce our, but,
our we have our other our we have second, our other guests.
Our second
patiently
baby
right waiting.
Here. Sorry, we go off on rants. That's why we call it the rant room. By the way. Introduce yourself.
First, let me just thank you for allowing me to be here.
Hillary. No problem.
I found you guys maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I have been sticking with you, running on tracks and working out in the gym, listening to your show.
We love that. Get it in, girl.
The reason that I moved here to LA from Brooklyn was your podcast with Carlito Machete.
Oh, yeah, Carlito.
Part one and two.
Mm-hmm.
That
was changed, that a great episode?
That changed my life, and I'm here right now.
Oh, yeah. All right, wait. Whose life is this? Who are you? Tell us.
So,
I go, what's your name, is, girl?
So, hey, I am Aisha Casey, all the way here in LA now from Brooklyn, New York.
Right, right.
I'm a writer-director after several other careers in corporate finance, and I was a court reporter for a long time.
That's a great background.
Oh, I know.
Don't they interest you as a writer, though?
Life experience,
right,
baby.
Right.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I've been...
Seen a lot
working,
of crazy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been places from Wall Street to the Senate floor, you know,
interesting,
and
right.
IMF hearings, things like that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, a few years ago, maybe 6 years ago, I changed my direction and wanted to go into entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of 2016, I dropped everything and moved here to pursue this thing.
Mm.
My question for Paul,
mm-hmm.
and you, Hilliard, and Chris, because it's the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a lot of people flocking here with their...
Oh, they're coming.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Their hopes
I know.
And dreams.
Their bags are packed.
Yeah.
You know, and I got out here at the beginning of last year, but I had a plan, you know, and I had a list of things that I needed to do in order to get somewhere.
Right.
What do you tell those people that are coming here with... you know, just their bags, and because you all make it look easy, they think right. it's easy.
Right.
So what do you tell people, you know, to do when they get here? They don't have a job. They don't have a clue.
They don't have a job.
A lot
of, a job.
Hey,
shit.
I know a lot of people that are doing it. I know a lot of people that are doing it.
This is not an easy city to live in.
It is not.
A job
it is
and
not.
A car. I think the one thing about LA that is really fucked up is that it chews people up.
Yep.
Oof.
It chews you up so hard. And the thing is, I remember I met a guy about 10 years ago and he told me this thing, and he'd been here for like 15, 20 years at the time. He was like, he doesn't even want to really invest time in people who've been here in less than 3 years, mm-hmm. because he's like, the city will throw you out before then. And it's like, why do I need to invest in you when I don't know if you have the wherewithal to survive how troubling the city
right.
is. I mean, there's so many distractions. There's so many things that will suck you in to doing to distract you from what your goal idea. It's like, how do you be the best person that you want to be? And you can do that by doing your work. But everything is out here to prevent you to do that. It might be the weather. It might be some people of the opposite sex. It could be the beach. It could be like so many things that can just get in your way. Like other people will make their dreams your dreams.
Right.
And then next thing you know, 5 years have gone by and you've not written your own stuff. You've not done all sorts of crazy, you know, and you're like, what the hell happened? And you know what? And I don't have any money. Oh, and I have the person with the pilot and the person didn't hire me
right.
on the show. And they're making the show now. I mean,
right.
all this kind of shit happens. And you know, and that shit, not just distracting, is demoralizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, now what do I do? It's very difficult to stay focused on what you're doing and to find people who will be supportive of you when you're out here. You know, I mean, you have to find a job. You have to be open. You have to like kind of like be aware of what your limitations are and how much you'll stomach and how much you won't stomach.
I mean, I would put it like this. I always look at it like this. What would I do if I just moved here? I think That's the important thing. Mm-hmm. I moved here in 1996, mm-hmm. January 1996. It was a different time.
Right, definitely.
I don't think there was maybe a barely an internet at that time, right?
AOL.
Yeah. AOL.
Yeah, yeah, that was, I mean.
You've got mail.
Yeah. That motherfucker.
And the modem. The modem.
All I know is we used to fax.
I got 14.4, baby. I am flying now.
Everybody had fax machine and shit. Things are different today.
Yeah.
Right? I actually think, maybe it's just my opinion. Now, there's a lot more competition because it's easier to make projects, right? Mm-hmm. However, I think you guys have it a little more easier than we did.
We do.
And I only mean that because it's easier to make projects, you can make your own. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they're going to be good, though. Mm-hmm. Your job is to do your best to make them as good as possible. Now, where I'm going with that is, if I was to move here, the first thing I would do is find a job that paid me tips. Mm-hmm. Here's why. Like Steel, here I am. I do fairly well as an independent writer myself, and I still cut hair on the side. People don't know that. Mm. Don't I, Chris? You know what I mean? A few of my friends know I still cut hair on the side. So I still do it. Probably have like 5 or 10 people a week, and I do it so I always have what I call hamburger money, mm-hmm. right? Hamburger money is, yo, you want to go meet me somewhere? Sure. I don't have to ask you to pay for my shit. I got my own fucking money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's the money you need in your pocket so you sustain yourself and never feel like, damn, I wish I had. Mm-hmm. Or
just go out to have coffee with someone.
Whatever the fuck it is. Sometimes you need to pay for some people. Like, you don't want to call Chris, as an example, mm-hmm. to go meet you to teach you about directing, mm-hmm. and he pays for lunch. If you ask somebody to go, it's your job to take care of them.
Right.
You know what I mean? At least in my opinion. Maybe I'm just a little backwards on that. But that's how I look at shit. Usually, you go out to dinner or lunch with some successful writer or producer or whatever. They will cover the bill because they know you're fucking struggling. Yeah. But sometimes you want to look like, hey, dude, I asked you. Let me say thank you back. Right? So the first thing I would do is make sure I had a job that paid me tips, whatever that is for you, right? Second thing is, where are you going to live, right? Now, everybody knows, the Valley is becoming a popular place to live, believe it or not. I didn't know that until, you know, my mentor has moved over there.
I say
it's fine. Like you said, you probably found a cheap apartment over there that you can survive in, a house, whatever the fuck. You know, oh, she live in a house. She got to go. Look.
Backyard pool.
Look. You don't know her? Look, she patting her hair. So where do you live is really important. For me, I wanted to be in Hollywood. I knew, when I moved here as an actor. I came here to act. I didn't even know I wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. I happened to write a script, went to the finals of Sundance, and I was like, oh, shit, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do, right? But when I started, because I came from San Francisco, I used to always sit at coffee shops. Mm-hmm. It was just what we did. Fucking cold there. So that's what we did. Just so happens that when I started writing, I would be at the coffee shop, and I'd be sitting across from Lance Black and mm-hmm. all these guys. I didn't even realize that they became my boys, right? So it's about finding the right place. So I started learning which coffee shops are the ones that have all the cool writers at. And I would just eventually go visit them and sit there and get to know whoever was whatever. So whenever I meet writers and actors and anybody in this town who are like, oh, I don't even know anybody. Like, where the fuck are you doing?
Right.
Where are you going? You know what I mean? You know that Starbucks on Sunset at that particular place is where everybody goes. You know the Coffee Bean in West Hollywood is where all the gay people go. Insomnia is where, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Motherfucker, look into it. You know what I mean? So I'm going to give you that much. Little game. So figure those things out first. You know, go ahead, Paul. I know you're just killing you right now.
No.
Itching for a scratch.
When did you move here? 2016?
2017, the beginning of 2017.
So you've been here a year?
Yes. On the 10th is year? My anniversary.
You too, right?
Yep. Right. Well, this one will be a year. I've been here next month.
Okay.
All right. And you want to write TV or film?
Television.
Okay. Are you working right now?
Yes.
What are you doing?
I work on NCIS LA.
What do you do?
Oh, that, okay. So you have that gig.
Yes.
Okay. Then
I was more asking for people that are coming here now, not for me.
Right. Well, that's what I was getting to is you, I feel like, are doing the exact right thing for people that want to write television. Television is a bit of a different animal than features. And the fastest way into becoming a television writer is getting a gig on a television series as a writer's PA or an office PA or any kind of thing.
What's your position?
Script coordinator.
Office PA.
Okay, good.
And you get to know them and you do your job well and you get rewarded. It's just more freelance episodes of television. The 19, however many years I've been doing it, I have seen given out to script coordinators, writers' assistants, office PAs and stuff to give them their break as a reward for busting their ass, because we all know how hard you work and how little you get paid.
Right.
And if you do your job well and the writers like you, that's the fastest track. So right. people that come out here, I would say, is if TV is your thing, is look into that. Start finding out, you know, where the TV production offices are, where what shows you like, what kind of stuff do you want to do? Do you want to be a comedy writer? Do you want to be a drama writer? Do you want to be a cable writer? Do you want to be a broadcast writer?
Mm-hmm.
And start trying to find out, you know, there, I mean, NCIS New Orleans, we had at the beginning of the year an intern, unpaid, and she showed up every day for the first 3 or 4 months. She's now a paid assistant. She's a PA, you know, because she did her job well and put her time in. And so, and, you know, the writer's assistant on the show this year is getting a script with one of the showrunners, sharing credit on an episode because he did his job well, taking notes. And the big thing, I think, for me, well, it's definitely for me personally, but I think for a lot of other people too, is the assistants and the coordinators, the people that have the lower level positions, get rewarded not because, oh, you might be some amazing writer, but because you're doing your job that you were hired to do. Be a great writer's assistant. And then they'll say, all right, let me read your stuff. And if your stuff, the bar is low. They're not expecting you to be writing like Callie Kerr. You know, they're expecting, let's see what you can do. And if you show any signs of knowing what you're doing, they're going to give you a shot because they know they're going to rewrite you anyways.
Right.
And that's, for TV, that's the fastest way in. Features, talk to these two guys.
Well, I mean, I always talk about how I sold my first script. And I don't recommend this, but it was a story that was told to me. So I sold my first script this way. So I told you my first script that I ever wrote went to the finals of Sundance. So you get on a list, right? When you're on that list, all of a sudden, everybody and their mom wants to read the script.
Right.
So it just so happens, when I was an actor, still an actor at the time, I was with a manager who, he had me and this other guy, Billy, and Billy started his own little independent company. He started making these little $100,000, $200,000, you know, horror movies. He was a little trust fund kid, right? I called him that, so what? and so he made like 4 or 5 of them every year. He'd go to AFM and he'd sell them, whatever. So he saw my name on the list and was like, Hillary, you're a writer now? I was like, yeah. And he's like, you got any horror things? And I was like, well, I got this one little thriller. I guess I can add some more blood to it or some shit. So I said, okay. So I came in, I pitched it to him. He loved it. He bought it. And this was in February. I wrote it in a month. And in August, we were in Santa Barbara shooting, right? Year and a half later, we were at AFM, and they sold it in 3 hours to like 9 countries or something, right? Now, so I started getting all these panels, right? And all these things started happening. Boom. So I was on a panel with a very big writer. I was like the youngest, you know, baby writer at the time. And this writer said he got his big break. He didn't recommend this, is why I'm prefacing this, because I know this dude. I'm like, no, dude, don't do that. But just hear me out. He said, this is how he got his break. He met a producer who was a big, he was at a party. He met this huge producer. The producer, they were just yipping. And he said somehow they started talking about passion projects. The passion project from the producer was this project that he wished he could write but never had it written, you know, et cetera, et cetera. He said, I don't know what it was. I went, what if I was to tell you I'd write it for free? And the producer went, really? He said, yeah. Now the producer's going, I'm never going to get this project done. you know?
I'm on board that.
And he's going, I'm going to write it for free. Mm. He said this to him. He said, I'm going to ask you for two things. Access to you, and when I call you, call me back within 24 hours.
Right.
Now, here's what he was asking for. This shit, I swear to God, to this day, I'm like, that was the best game I ever heard in my life. I was just sitting on the panel like this. Speak, bitch, speak. Right? He said, so what he was asking for was this. He said, I want, why are you hitting my phone and stuff? He said, he wants access to him for this reason. So you and I know, you've done some movies too, right? So you develop your relationship with the guy who's going to produce and direct the movie. Mm-hmm. You're going to be on the set with him because you guys have developed the whole thing. He already knew that. So what happened was, eventually, he'd be calling him at night. He'd be going over there. They'd be in the middle of dinner. He'd be like, sit down. Boom. He developed that relationship with them. Never sold the movie, but he sold the project to some company, whatever. That got him in the guild, right? So a few years later, I was at a pie. I'm always at all these big parties. I'm like, there's such and such a producer. Beelined. We started yipping it up. I said, what's your passion project? One day, I said, what if I was telling everybody for free? Fucking did the exact same thing. All the access, calling him, showing up. He was at Raleigh Studio. I was over there all the time. Next thing you know, didn't sell, but I got that access. And then he was like, hey, a friend of mine read that script.
Right.
You, they're looking for a writer. You want to go over there? Then I wrote something for them. Then they were like, hey, we got this up. Boom. That's how you get yourself in the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, because networking. It's, you know.
But I took the chance.
Yeah.
You got to take a chance with somebody who you know can make profit.
Yeah, you don't. You don't want to say that to some guy that's like, "Hey, I'm a producer."
Right.
You know, if you don't know their credits.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, you have to know a lot about. I mean, look, the people you meet are gonna make things happen for you, and I think that. But you have to meet. But you have to spend a lot of time being careful on who you meet, and it's. And I think this is a great point. Like, know their credits. Do something for them. Like, there's someone on Twitter was saying that, like, you know, I think it was Stephen Knight or Stephen DeKnight, whatever his name is.
Oh, I know you're talking about that.
He was like, you know, like 95% of the projects that you do, someone's gonna are people saying no to you.
Right.
You rarely get the yes. So, but the people you got to meet, you got to know them and make things happen. I mean, that's kind of how my brother and I got our first job. Like we. Did a roundabout thing, which is probably really hard now, but we made a movie, a digital movie, when at the time when Sundance wasn't taking digital film, and they just opened it up to do digital shorts, and we went up with our film, and
the fuck you pay me?
No, this was like a Chop Shop, this was a long fucking time ago, and like people responded to it, and a couple people were like, oh, you know what, I want to meet you, like call me back in L.A. Here's my card. So we came into LA and we met some people and they were like, what are you writing? And, you know, we were really young and I was like, we're just writing this and blah, blah, blah. And then we had a meeting with a guy who liked the script and he was like, I want you to get an agent. And then we met this guy and then he had read a script of ours that he tried to sell and it didn't sell. And then about 6 months or like a year later, I think, maybe not, I don't know, we ran into the guy at the beach and he was like, oh, you guys, I love you guys. You guys are so great to work with. You guys are so...
He was like a junior. Now he moved up.
No, he was leaving the company. He was working for Wendy Fineman. He was like, I'm leaving Wendy's company.
Mm-hmm.
But they're taking pitches on the project. So I'll put in the call with the new person, and you guys just go in and take the pitch.
Right.
You know, and we were like, okay. But he was like, but you guys are so good. They're going to love you. Because when the project we did with him before that didn't sell, you know, he was asking for some changes and we were like, whatever you want, dude. I mean, if like what you need to, that's within line of what the project is going to be. Not some wild shit like, hey, put a sea monster in this thing. It's just like, you know, it fit stuff that worked.
Right.
And he was like, you are good to work with. Because everyone is concerned with writers about, are you going to be a problem to work with?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be too protective of your work that we can't make it to the point where I wanted to make it better? And then So we went in and did this pitch and got the job, mm-hmm. you know. And the crazy thing is, the guy who was our champion was no longer at the company, mm. but he just recommended us, right. you know. And that's how we. So I mean, you just got to meet people and make sure that they that in the professional setting that they get along with you, because in the feature business, they know that it's like a lot of work and the movies might not go, and they're going to be back and forth with so many drafts that if they don't think that you are the person that they can hang out with and like come to their house and everything like that, then you're not going to get a job,
right.
you know, because they know the movie's not going to go. They just know that, I mean, the fuck, there's so many movies sitting around, mm-hmm. you know, with actors attached and everything. Just, not going to do it.
But they needed to finish that contract on the way.
Yeah, you know, they had to do it. So, I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I think it's super hard with movies now because they don't make movies anymore. I mean, what did they do? 10 a year? Maybe every studio is 10 a year. The rest of them are all indie films with indie money. It doesn't matter if it's got Paramount presenting it. That mm-hmm. money came from somebody else,
right.
and so that makes it a whole other type of like ball game. But there are those studio jobs. There are those assignments that, mm-hmm. and they only give you those if people can vouch for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, people vouching for you. Which means you can't give the material that's not ready, you know.
Right. I would also add, you know, come here and be open to change.
Mm-hmm.
you know, you come here, like, you guys are in TV, and it's great,
mm-hmm.
but be open to, you know, learning how to write a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to progress to that. TV is hot now, but the cycle could change.
I don't think open to it. I think do it. I think mm-hmm. you've got to write in other mediums.
Right.
I think you know, if you
novels, write TV, short stories,
write a
whatever,
short story. Something. If you write, yeah. And that goes back to that thing about, like, what do I write if I only have this lunch hour to write or something?
Right.
It's the more muscles that you can create, the more, you know, if you've only written TV specs, yeah, write a feature, write a short story, and write a play, you mm-hmm. know, it's so important.
Yeah, people are getting staffed by plays now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing, too, about writing a movie, different than writing like a TV pilot. I mean, like, honestly, it's like order of magnitudes higher to get a TV show on the air than it is to get a movie made, particularly now, because mm-hmm. people want to make movies. It's a lot of money to make. You can, you know, make over $1 million. I mean, which was at the time back when I was starting out, a movie that was $1 million, you knew was shit.
Mm-hmm.
But now you look at movies that are $1 million or less, and they're fantastic
mm-hmm.
because the barriers to entry are so cheaper. And the thing is, you have, there's so many hoops you got to get through to see if a TV show is going to get made.
Right.
A lot. Whereas the movie, you can go make it. And if it's made, I mean, that's our thing. We shot a short film and it got in and it made stuff. And usually what happens in our career, like, we would shoot something and people would respond and say, well, okay, so what do you have? Oh, we got these scripts. Because no one wants to read shit. That's right. The thing. But they'll watch 5 minutes on everything. I mean, and definitely know how to write, you know, there's something on like YouTube Red now, some piece. So there's, like, don't think digital is not some place to be at, because there's money there and it's covered by the Guild too. So
there's a show on Showtime now, which is called Smilf.
Yep.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is born out of, you know, Frankie, the star of it and creator of it, was an actor and was really frustrated with the work she was getting and not getting.
Mm-hmm.
And so she and her now husband, I think they're boyfriend, girlfriend then or sometime, they made a 9-minute film.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did it with their own money and they just did this thing. She had this idea for this character, not even for a character and for like a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this 9-minute film. They made it. People started seeing it. It was like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? It gets passed around
people
like
talk,
Hollywood.
If it's good, people
now
talk about it.
She has Golden Globe nominations,
right,
and
right.
she is set for life.
Right.
Yeah.
That show, even if she does nothing else after that show, she's done. She
right.
did it,
right.
you know?
That was that. Anything else?
That show. So now I have a technical writing question. And you were talking earlier about when you write your NCIS episodes. I've written several specs, and I found it much easier to write specs than it is to write my own pilots, which I'm working on now.
You're talking about specs of an existing
specs
show.
Specs of an existing right. show, right. So, because I already know the characters and I already know the world and things like that.
You've done all that work we were talking about earlier, you got to put in.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but for the pilots that I'm writing, and one that I'm writing right now, I'm on my fourth draft of it. And now I'm going back in and trying not to make all the characters sound like me.
Mm.
How do I do that successfully? You know, I'm trying to go deeper within myself and try to, like, okay, imagine this as a different person and things like that, but what else can I be doing?
That's a great, great technical question.
I got a bunch of stuff in there. I'll let you go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, well, no, you probably have more. I mean, that's to me, that is one of those most important
Chris
things.
Chris is getting itchy over there.
It's fucking hard.
It's, well, yeah, and it's, but that's what I call voice.
Right.
And it's being, and a lot of people have a lot of different definitions for voice and stuff, but for me, like, when I'm reading, and this is why I can't stand, you know, the screenwriting gurus and the people that pay, you know, to go to these pitch fests and pay Screenwriter U, whatever that ripoff place is, and there's some, all these different things that charge money for notes and advice and knowledge and critiques, and that's why there's so much bad stuff out, because everybody is doing the exact same thing. They're following these technical rules and they're forgetting about that, which is so critical. And the only way I can answer that personally, I'm sure both these guys have much better answers, but I can only speak personally for me, how I do that. 'Cause it's so that asking that question makes me almost assured that you're going to be successful because that is so self-aware for a young writer.
Right.
And to be able to see that in your script, like, these people, it's not just they're all sounding the same. They're all sounding like me. Mm-hmm. I'm talking through all these characters. Right. That is a huge thing to be able to pick up on. You know, I was probably 6 years in of writing before I was like, wait a minute. So I commend you for that. That's incredible. And for me, it, like, there's little tiny tricks I would use back in the day for that, which was literally stealing people's personalities that I either know or that I run into, that I, you know, the Starbucks person or some idiot at 7-Eleven, you know. There was a woman, really quick, and I'll let you guys talk about this. But this happened specifically that I was writing something one time. This was years and years ago, and I pulled up to the 7-Eleven in LA, and I got out, and there was this clearly like homeless woman sitting outside, you know, the front, and she had her bags and she had her shopping cart and all that stuff, and I'm walking up, and I'm like, I gotta walk by her to go to 7-Eleven, and as I'm walking towards her, and I start to turn the thing. And I put this in a screenplay, and she goes, "You just keep trying. Maybe someday you'll become the man you think you are."
Wow. Damn, she just was like,
"Wow."
Brought you damn.
And I froze. Like I stopped, and then I tried to blow. Like, I didn't hear that, and you know, and it was like, you know, 10 years of therapy from this homeless person outside 7-Eleven, right? And I got, and I just, like, that she, that line.
That's a great character.
Stayed with me, right, and that's what happened, is I went back to this thing that I was struggling writing with, and I went back, and I just had that thing, and I took a character that I was, the whole thing wasn't working because the second lead of the story was just there was no uniqueness, there was no thing, and I took that person and I plugged it into this character of my story.
Now she sounds completely different.
It was a domino effect on the other characters, because then the other characters are responding to her differently.
Yeah. Right.
And it was just so, it's like, for me, it's like stealing little things like that from people, you know?
It's all theft. It's all theft. Everything of it is theft. Don't think if you're a writer, you're not stealing. You have to. There was a guy, I can't remember his name now, but he was an editor. I want to say he was Hunter S. Thompson's editor. And he wrote a book about writing and his experiences as being an editor. And he made a great point. He was like, you know, it's like, someone's voice is how they describe something.
Mm-hmm.
So when people talk, I always kind of think about what's their background to have them say what they're going to say. I mean, because, you know, first time you write something, like, you're just writing the dialogue that you have to get what you want to say. And when you're going to go back and look at it, you're thinking about, how is this person going to say this? And if you've done your character work right, you've maybe taken this homeless person and say, this person is the is the homeless person. And you know what? And like, all your friends have fucking pet phrases. There's a guy that my brother and I know, he always uses this, that, and the other. He always says that whenever he's talking. We're like, you know what?
Verbal tics.
Yeah, there's someone who's going to do that in their speech. And but the thing that you got to do is...
My brother-in-law always says, I mean, no offense. Like, that don't have nothing to do with the fuck you're talking about.
But you say to yourself also... When is he saying that in the sentence?
Right.
When is that a connecting thing? Is context. That like a, you know, is it to start every phrase or does he end it because he wants to say, because you would say something else there, but he says this, that, and the other, you know, and you go, okay, so now I'm like figuring that out. And it's like, but just to be aware of it is like a big thing. And this, I mean, think about diction. I mean, that's a big thing too. Right. It's like, you know, smart people speak a certain way. Correct. People who are not necessarily, but people who are educated speak a certain way. People speak different ways based upon where they are. People from the South speak differently from people from the North. And it might have to be that you, the first time you did, to force yourself to say this whole thing is maybe taking place in Chicago, let's just say. But this character is going to be from Alabama, so I can figure out how to work that they always speak differently.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that way, you're working that technique in constantly, and then it just becomes easier because you're going, oh, he always starts sentences this way, or she starts sentences this way because, you know, she's from, you know, Georgia, but she went to school, you know? And I mean, because if you listen to people from the South, just for instance, those people who are educated from the South have a very kind of like lazy, slower speech pattern than when they're not, they speak faster. And it's like, okay, so now how do I do this? And they might clip their words. And even like you can write their words clipped if that's for that person, you know, but you got to think about it that way.
And the other thing too, really quick is I think that's really important what Chris is saying. And also when you get into that, like when you take a verbal tic, like this, that, and the other, or somebody that's always like, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, instead, make sure that you aren't just writing that so that person on the page sounds different. Like, figure out, why does that character always say this, that, and the other?
Right.
What is behind that? Right. Is it because they're not confident? Is somebody who, you know, adds fucking to, you know, prefacing everything you're saying, oh, this fucking guy in this fucking place and you got to see this fucking thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do they talk like that? Is it because they're not confident enough in themselves that they're going to get across the enthusiasm or emphasis of this word? You know, get deep into your people like that, and it'll start getting easier and easier to find their own voices.
I'm just going
to
piggyback on both of you. I think you guys are right on the money. I would take it. This is something I could talk about all day long, but I'm going to keep it as short and concise as possible. First of all, you are right on the money. I always call it an ism. So that character who has that this, that, and other, that's his ism. Mm-hmm. That's his little thing he does. Like, for instance, I've known Chris for a couple of years now. So, you know, I know he has a nickname. So he was talking about it like, what's the nickname? I wouldn't call him Chris. I would call him by his nickname. You know what I mean? We know his brother, Will, is Chip. So we would always call him Chip. It shows you how close we are and how much we know each other.
What is Chris's nickname?
Huh?
What is Chris's nickname?
Do you want to tell him?
Because I'm going to call him Cinechris until I know that he's got... Sorry, go ahead.
Anyway. So
you got that from Will. You got that from Will. You didn't get that from me. Right. I didn't call myself that.
Everybody was... So, Trip. So you have to think about this. This is what immediately made me think about it. Two things. One, it made me go, you need to go back to your character bios.
Yep.
You need to go back there. Don't go back to the script. Go back to your bios and go, wait a minute. Who is this person? What's their ism? Where are they from? All that stuff. And it'll start to tell you a little bit about them. Go as far as Chris and Paula talk and ask yourself, like, what were they like when they were young? Did they have a dog? It sounds stupid. stupid, but it immediately makes you go, ah, so she divorced her husband before, so now she's got an issue with men, right? Or whatever the fuck it is. So when she's confronted by a dude, she's going to confront him a little bit different. The other thing I was going to say is this. Every time I introduce a new character, especially in the beginning when you first meet them, I tell you who they are the first time you see them, whether I show it or whether they speak it. So if they speak it a certain way, if it's the bad guy, I show you how bad they are the first time you see them. So you see that they come out the fucking gate with the guns drawn, or, you know, they, what was that? We were talking about that one movie where they had the gun sitting there in front of them the whole time that they were sitting at the table. That one movie you were talking about. What was that? You know what I'm talking about. But you figure out a way to set up your character so that you see that your hero has to go up against the fucking baddest person in the world. How do you introduce the baddest person in the world that we haven't seen before, right? So that's one thing I would do is try to figure out how do you set up each and every time you introduce a character, what are they saying or doing that introduces them that way? So, for example, Paul was right on something. So how do they speak? So do they have a thing where they say, like, you know, you feel me, or whatever it is that they say, start it from the beginning. But how do you introduce them that shows why they talk like that, which is where Paul was going. Why do they talk like that? So if you put them in a situation that shows their weakness, and we go, ah, he's the weak one, so we see why he's talking like that.
Behavior, so much behavior. More interesting than right. Backstory. Instead of saying, like, you know, Carl, 20s, he's this and this and this and this and this, you show it by something that he does says or reacts in right. a way in that. And it's so much, it's like when we did the three pages with that
right.
guy.
Right.
It's 99% of the time, less is better. Not just more, but better in screenwriting. Right. And what he's saying is dead on behavior.
Right. Behavior. And that's the key. That's why I said you need to go, I think you might need to go back to your bio, look at your bio. And a lot of times people just do like this much on the bio. I'm like, you need to do some more, you know, because it's almost like you said, it's like an exercise. The exercise is for you to really picture and think about that person. And you can tell in a really good script, like we were talking about our outlines for our other projects that we have. You look at our bios and it's like, damn, did you 3 or 4 pages on one character? I need to know who they are. And they may never even show up in there at all, but the more you know, the more you're able to speak about them, the more you're able to put them in a situation where if he's a former soldier and he's dealing with this bad guy, how is he going to react to him? Well, if I didn't make him a soldier, he wouldn't react to him that way. You know what I mean? So it's little things like that. You have to go back into their past. You have to think about your story. You have to think about what kind of a job do they have, right? People always forget about occupation.
Absolutely.
What is the occupation you give your character? Because to me, that occupation is supposed to tell you a little bit
so
about
great.
Them.
There's a book. There's a book called Gig. You know this book?
Mm. Gig?
Gig.
G-I-G.
And it's probably 3 inches thick, and all it is paragraph descriptions of just jobs that people have.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Okay, right. 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Okay,
and
cool.
It's just like, you know, all kinds of jobs you didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also like, you know, bank teller. But there's all these other jobs and then a little paragraph about what that job is. And I love that because it's not only finding something unique, but you start reading about what this job is, and then you start thinking like, oh, who does that? Who
right.
who wants to say, I'm going to go do that?
Right.
I'm going to be the one that puts the little eyelets on the end of the shoelace. You know, like there's mm-hmm. just it's crazy what he's saying.
Yeah, so you just got to think about what is the occupation of the person because let me just ask you this. So the pilot you're working on, what's the occupation?
For the main character, she was a consultant. So now
what
she's
kind of
opening
a consultant?
Up her own business. I'm sorry. She was the admin in a consulting firm. So
okay.
She would place the people that went out to do different assignments.
Okay. This is a drama?
It's a dramedy.
Okay.
So she's probably... Okay. So you tell me that she's got to be good on the phone. She's got to be kind of a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
She's
yeah.
got to have some catchphrases. She's got to speak in a certain way that's like somewhat salesy. I mean, to me,
right.
I mean, that's what you just tell me. If I don't see that.
Like Don Cheadle's character in, what you call it?
Oh,
what's
yeah,
that show?
House of Lies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But see, even in that show, I believe, and I can't remember what the pilot was, it's been so long since I've seen it, but I recall him coming into a case and killing it the first time we see him. So you see the ability the character has the first time.
Yeah, you saw a superpower.
you see it immediately. So you gotta. That's why sometimes they always say start late. So you start the show late in a situation. So you come in on your character. That's why like a lot of law shows start on the case. You know, you either start on what happened to get them to the case, or you start on the lawyer in the middle of a case defending somebody. You see how good they are. You see how they manipulate a situation. You know what I mean? To go, ah, they can get themselves out of anything. They're the best at whatever they do. And they get home, and home is fucked up. You know what I mean? They're good there, but it's something wrong at home. You know what I mean? It's an opposite somewhere.
Little things you can do, too, if you think about that. You know, like somebody in a consulting firm like that, and that's kind of high profile, it's kind of sophisticated, and then come up, well, did that character come up in some way that she is ashamed of and hides, and so she's affected a different way of speaking, and only when she gets riled up or she gets emotional that you see that Alabama drawl come back out, and something that she's worked at. I mean, little things like that, as long as it's subtle, can do wonders for giving voice to characters.
Right.
I mean, again, like occupation, you know, I watched this movie called Wind River the other day. Have you seen it?
Not yet.
It's interesting because like Jeremy Renner, he plays he keeps the population of like mountain lions low.
Low?
That's his job. And it takes place in Wyoming, you know? So, like, so he
keeps them under control.
No, okay,
he's right. A mountain lion police.
To kill them and stuff. like mountain lions or wolves and stuff that could affect their farms. Right. I was like, so you go and hunt animals, not for the sport, but so that the farmers don't lose their crop because even some of the horses dead. But then he's quiet. He doesn't speak a lot because his job. He's got to be like a quiet man. It's like it's an isolated thing.
Because he's hunting all the time.
It's isolated. And I was like, that's why, you know, he's paired up against the Olsen girl, and she kind of like.
She talks all the
Mary Kate.
And it's just, you know, and it's interesting to see just like, okay, they chose that in a way. And then she's from the city. She's from Vegas. Not supposed to be there. It's this great contrast too that makes his lack of speaking even more pronounced, as you know, on the page. So it's maybe he's got four words. She's got like three sentences. Right. You know, and it's just, you know, that's something too that I think, you know.
Speaking of Renner too, one thing I'm my by far favorite screenwriter is Tony Gilroy, and speaking of Renner. The Jason Bourne movie he wrote and directed with Jeremy Renner, there's something really fascinating. If you go back and watch that movie that Gilroy did in that with Renner's character, is his character from the beginning of the movie to the end, there's an evolution in how he speaks. Because at the beginning, he's just, you know, he's the robot, and he's been isolated, and he really doesn't know how. In that first, you know, scenes when he meets the guy in the cabin, and through that, when you see, it's really remarkable that as almost scene to scene, but definitely act to act, you see the character just begins to become more human. Obviously, that's the thing, but just the way he speaks, and it's not just an acting. I mean, Renner's great in the thing, but you can also tell it's in the dialogue because it's in the words he's using, in the phrases he's using. It changes by the end of that when he's become who he really is. He's found himself, and he was a different person in the beginning. And it's a really cool, super subtle thing to watch when you go back and see that movie.
That's a really good example. Okay, go. What you got, Shanae? Anything else? While you have a little closer, get the mic.
I just like what she said, like finding voice and characters. Because like it's like one thing that I have an issue with as well is one thing that I struggle with the most with writing is finding my voice. And making each character voices different instead of like sounding the same. So I'm just wondering like how do I get better at that? You know, like, does that take time? No, as a writer,
yeah, it takes time. Yeah. It takes listening to people,
reading
a lot. Like something that, like, I had a breakthrough like last summer on something. I was writing this short story, and I had been writing it for like over a year because I was never happy with how the description sounded. I love the characters, love the story. But something didn't feel right, and I decided. It takes place in West Virginia, right? So these people are kind of in Appalachia. And I decided to make the narrator telling the story have a voice similar to the environment. And it just was interesting.
So the narrator was straight at first.
Straight talking, blah, blah, blah. And then it allowed me to make certain kind of choices in describing things differently.
But see, to me, that's a tone thing.
Yeah, right. It's a total tone thing, but I had to figure that out to make it sound like that. And then that person couldn't sound like the other characters who were in the piece, you know. So it was an interesting kind of like chess move. I was like, oh, if he's talking like this, and this is what you're reading the whole time in your ear, as if it's like someone's telling you the story at a bar, that's how I wanted it to sound like. He got to sound one way. He's got to sound, the character's got to sound another way, but it's got to sound like a different place. And it can't sound like me either. You know, it was a really interesting just exercise. And then when I got it, I was like, okay, cool. This does not sound like anything I've done. And I wouldn't think it was me if you read it, you know. But it was like, it took me a long time to figure that out. You know, it's just a lot of trial and error, you know, and then making sure that no one else, you got to go back and read things separately and go, okay, I'm just going to read his dialogue now. You know, where is it? Okay, he says, you know, does he say this a lot? Does he begin his sentences this way? Does he, or whatever? And then you know, well, then no one else can, you know?
I think it goes back to a lot of it is that thing we talked about earlier of not writing before you're ready to write it.
Right.
You know, the more notes you can make, the more character bios you can create, the more deeper you can get on your outlines, the more you can think about all this stuff. You want, like, when it's done correctly, the actual writing of the screenplay, TV or film, should be the easiest part of the entire process.
That's why it should be the fastest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why I know I can write a script in under 24 hours.
Right.
It's if you do that due diligence, if you put all that work in that we all hate beforehand, then it solves so many problems. And again, I think there's that big thing that younger, newer writers make is writing too early because it's so exciting. Like, I got this idea for a movie. I'm going to start writing this idea for a movie.
And it looks so cool to see fade in.
And I know this, and I came up with this opening, and this opening is so amazing, and I know exactly how I want to end the movie, and it's going to be so great. And then you hit, like, page 63, and you're just, like, dead.
Right.
And, you know, or – and so it's just it's all these things we've been talking about. And I just think if you – can work out all that stuff as much beforehand, it's going to make it that much easier on you. You know, I mean, I will write, if I'm stuck, I'll write a scene that I know is never going to go in the script. But I'll hit some point.
Is this a filler?
This isn't even before. This is still like in the outline phase. Okay. But if I'm at the outline phase, because I've learned now the outline is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to the outline, and like, I don't know what to see. I don't know how to get from here to here. There's what is missing in that gap. And so sometimes I'll just take two of the characters and I'll just put them at, you know, brunch at the peninsula, or I'll put them, you know, in an alley downtown at midnight, and I just start writing a scene, and I just start them talking to each other, and it's
environment.
Just,
environment.
Yeah. It's important. Just, and I, and I'll try, sometimes I've written four or five different ones, you know, just, and then it's until something clicks and then I'm like, oh, okay, wait, maybe then I can use that. That's how I can get over here. I would have to do this first.
Can I ask you a question? Cause I've done that too, that exercise where sometimes you're in a room and it feels cold and you're like, I wonder what happens if I change the weather, if they go outside. Now,
that's great.
Now it's raining. How are they going to react to that? You know, now it's a storm. There's a car crash. Whatever the fuck, you know, you just change the
environment. Even if it's not part of your story, you're going to go in your episode. There's Scott Frank said there's this thing he does, which I thought was really interesting. when he writes his scripts is when he writes this sort of scriptment, which is kind of like half right. of a script and mm-hmm. half of a treatment thing, he will put in details, finite details of every environment that the characters are in. Whether they're in an off, like if they're in an office, he'll describe the desk lamp. He'll describe the carpet. He'll describe the stain on the walls. Mm. He'll get like super finite. None of it's going to go
like
in
a novel,
legit,
right?
You know, but he puts all that into it, so then it's in his head. So then when he's writing that scene, he knows, you know, if that guy, you know, shoves the other guy back against that, well, then, you know, the Ming yeah. Dynasty vase falls exactly. on the ground, exactly. you know, because he put that in there, or the, you know, and that's just another little tool. It's right. just an interesting little way to again, get deeper into your characters. And the deeper you get, the more original their voices are going to be.
Right. I think that's game.
What you said about the Ming vase, because you could not describe that when you set the scene, but if there is going to be this argument, you kind of said this is like a well-appointed office, blah, 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 and then when someone gets pushed against the wall, you can say you knock over to Ming vase if there's going to be something break at all. If you're going to say something's going to break, like, oh, he knocks over a vase. You just say, you can put that little descriptor in front of it, and it just adds texture to the scene, you know, at a point where it's like faster and to read, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to like that big block in the beginning, which so you kind of can just, I don't know. So you paint more in the mind, mm-hmm. you know, but you got to choose where to do that because you're always like fighting for white space.
And that's like a little character reveal thing. When you introduce somebody, you know, and they walk into, you know, Charmaine's office and it's, you know, and everything is, you know, well appointed and neat and whatever. And, Or you just say you walk into the disheveled office, blah, 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 and then something happens and there's an argument and the vase gets knocked over and then the other character, you know, and she goes, well, that was $30,000 down the drain. Then you've just revealed something right. about that character that right. they had a $30,000 vase sitting in their mm-hmm. office. Like, that tells you something about that
so
person.
Much. Mm-hmm. So much. And every character would deliver that differently depending yeah. on who the character is.
Right. Right. You know instead I mean? Of saying, like, walk in, and she has a $30,000 vase on the desk right. because, you know, she's this and she's this. You just, you don't tell it. You show it, you know, that old cliche.
Right.
And it's behavior.
That's, right. like, that's like one thing that I struggle with most is telling versus showing. And, like, right now I'm in grad school with her, and my teacher's always telling me, like, you can't, like, tell what's going on in the story. You have to show it, you know, visually with her. Right. That belongs in a novel, not a screenplay. And it's so hard for me to, you know, to not tell what's going on in my story, you know, because I guess it's, like, something that that I haven't, like, developed yet, you know, versus, like, more as I write.
Yeah, it'll come.
It'll
promise
come.
You it'll come.
And what helps me, because when I first started writing, that first script that went to Sundance was really descriptive. Now I've learned, I'm still really visual, but I think now I've learned to think staccato. You know what I mean? Now it's like two or three lines. It's just clean. Boom. There's a slug. Boom. It's just really clean. You know what I mean? And to me, a script should be pretty. You yep. should be. That's why you have to learn to make a copy and read it on the page. It looks different. You scrolling like this, your eyes are like addicted to the way you
that
think it looks.
That is a huge you know? Point that I can't emphasize right. enough is so important. I personally think of printing out your stuff and reading hard copies of it. It is, and it doesn't matter if, oh, agents, managers, producers all read electronically now.
You need
there's
to.
Something right. texturally about it. You get deeper into mm-hmm. it. It's, yeah, you're disconnected when you're looking at it on a computer screen or an iPad screen, like we're disconnected on social media. There's right. nothing social about social media. You know, we're all totally disconnected.
Right, that's true.
And it's like that. When you print your stuff out and you're, I can't. That's such a great point.
I print everything out, and I do like the. I mean, the editing is all done printed.
Get that red pen out. You know, go through that.
And he's the interesting point about the managers and producers and actors are going to read off their iPad or whatever the hell it is. But see, they're reading differently than you are reading at that point. Like they're reading to be swept up in the world,
right?
And you are trying to be able to create that wave, and you can't see how well the wave's created. Necessarily, unless you print it out, you know, because I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'll miss an error when I'm reading on the page. Right. I mean, I'm reading on the screen, but I'll pick it up on the page. Like, fuck, I didn't put the
you
there.
Didn't even
what the hell?
See
what
it.
The hell? Right.
Because your eyes are used to scrolling this. You just are just, and it's also because a script, like I always tell everybody, and you heard this, a script is a puzzle, right? And you know the puzzle by heart. Mm-hmm. You know every word, everything in it. So you think you have a the there because you hear a the. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Until you make a copy and read it, you're like, how the fuck did I miss?
Right.
I know there was a the there.
And that's a great point because you're, all of us, we can only write objectively.
Right.
Whereas the people that are going to be reading are reading subjectively. And the only way to get some sort of subjective view of it is, for me, like printing it out, and it removes you that one where you get a little more subjective when you're looking at the hard copy of it, and you can find stuff that you can't see on your screen, because you have to. That's why it's so important too to have other people read your stuff and everything before it goes out. You've got to get the subjective viewpoints and what, because we're all too close to the material, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many crazy things, about, like technical stuff like that. It's like absurd. It's like, I mean, the whole reason why that you even type in Courier is because it's like a monospace font.
Right.
Like, so if you're changing words out, then you could count the letters in your head and say, okay, it's five letters and it's just eight letters here, so it's gonna save me three. But if I did that with Arial, it might not save me three spaces because the font doesn't take up the... It's just all this kind of crazy stuff to make it look pretty on the page.
And there's a lot of ways to... I know we're talking a long time. I know you got to get going, Paul. But it's...
Oh,
it's,
no, I'm good.
It's about... Like, there's a lot of little techniques that I do that I'll never forget when I first figured this out. People started reading my scripts going, but you're very advanced in the way that you write. And it's only because I read fucking Shane Black and all Tony Gilroy. I see how the guys are writing, and they're very staccato in the way they write. Even though Shane explains a lot of shit and talks to you, he talks to you in a way that's in the tone of the script. People keep forgetting about that,
absolutely,
right? So I've learned to develop my own little style. So when I'm being staccato, I'm doing things like this. Let me give you a perfect example. So a lot of times people will say exterior or interior... the lot building day. Inside the lot building is what I'm like, no.
Yep.
I already told you interior of the lot building.
That's a big flashing red amateur.
Right? It drives me. And I read them in one of the Golden Globe scripts the other day. I'm like, what? How did it get in here?
I still do it by accident.
You know, I'm like,
still, I caught myself doing that. Interior squadron, like he enters the squadron.
You know what I mean? You don't need to repeat it again. And you see the repetitiveness.
He runs down the hallway when our interior is in the hallway.
Exactly. You don't need to keep repeating yourself like that. So what I've learned to do is be very staccato. So I've already set up interior of the lot, room, whatever. And then I'll just describe it staccato. Tiny. Sparse. Whatever it is, I'll keep it simple. Whatever it is I need to say that sets the tone of whatever we're going to do. So that it's not a whole bunch of on the walls above. Unless on the walls is going to come up later. You know? Don't set up something that doesn't mean anything. The vase. Yeah. If the vase is going to fall because it needs to fall because she has a good line, I might set it up.
Yeah, but yeah. Oh, that's, you know,
going
what I mean?
On
that's
the
a
mantle.
Big thing. That's
right.
It's a big thing about description. The over-description is that the shorter words that he's talking about paint a bigger picture. Also, you know, you're never going to be able to describe what the production designer is going to create.
But also, everybody who reads it's going to visualize that
their
differently.
Thing, right.
If you say there's a Ming vase sitting on the table when they walk in the room, every single reader is going to have a different picture of that in their mind. None of us, how many of us know what a Ming vase looks like? And it can look like anything.
Right.
So that's why it's so
important. And to add to that, keep it in the tone of the script.
Yes.
So if you're in a horror movie, you're probably describing it, you know, dark, it's creepy, whatever those words, those adjectives and verbs are that you need to really make you feel that way, make us feel it if it's comedy, you know, the room is bright.
That's,
you know,
another really great point, Hilliard, that I think and I find with a lot of newer writers make this mistake is, and it goes back to, because I think they're listening to and reading all the wrong information because it's all technical, is every script you write has to be written in the tone of that thing.
From
and
start
it's like,
to finish.
If it's a comedy script, even if you're the exact same writer and you're writing a comedy and you also have a thriller, those two scripts better not sound the same or you've failed, you know? Even if the comedy has comedy in it and it's funny and the way you write it, the action lines, the things, you have to be aware of that. You it have makes to. The read
that's part of the ride
better.
That's part of the ride. And you have to start fade in has to set the tone of the script. If it's a comedy, I want to know as soon as you open the door, boom, somebody fucking falls on the ground in some funny way, whatever the fuck it is. You know what I mean? Set that tone immediately to tell us that this is the world.
Like I just read this great romantic comedy and it by this writing team, and it's so cool. I gave it to my agents because it was like, I was like, this is so original and so fresh. The voice, the tone, because within the first, like it opens up and you see this woman walking and she's crossed the street and something happens. That's kind of like, okay, I've seen that a million times with stuff. But then it starts, the script starts talking to the reader in a way. And like, yes, everybody's done that since Shane Black started it, or William Goldman. But it's, they said, like, literally, I think the third sentence in the thing said, this is not going to be, I know you think you're about to, you know, experience romantic comedy, but this is not going to be like any romantic comedy you've ever seen before, because this one's real, because this one ends shittily. And here's how it happens.
You could do
and
that.
Just, and like
you could do
and
that.
Like that's something that like so many, you know, gurus would tell you, right. Don't ever do anything like that.
Bullshit.
You know, I read that and I was like, oh, wow, okay, I'm gonna keep reading.
Curiosity.
Yeah.
That's what it got, didn't it?
And then from that moment on, every page, the way the thing was written, no one ever talks about the language of the screenplay. And the way it was written, just the descriptions, just the action lines, just you know, not just in the character's dialogue, but the way the script itself was written was so fresh and so entertaining of a read that I was on page 55 before I knew it.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, this is so original. And it was really, and it was a little bit dark because it took the classic romantic comedy tropes that we've all seen, you know, which are still done, and it shifted the.
See, I want to read it now.
It's great.
Send it to me.
And it's called The Other Girl, and it's basically you know the two people that should you know that you meet in the beginning, and you know they should come together at the end of the movie, and then there's this person. And thing. Well, it's from the point of view of the other person in the thing, and how, and it's dark, but it's hilarious,
which is what I love.
Yeah, it's right. and I just finished it, and I was like, "What are you guys doing with this?" Like, oh, our manager said we've got to make the ending more uplifting, and we got to do this, and I was like, "No, no, 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 no." I mean, can I give this to my agency? Can I? Because this thing should be on the spec market.
Right, and see, that's really important to me. See, people think that guys in your position don't help them. But it's not true.
Yeah. If somebody just goes and yelled at me on Twitter about that. It's like, oh, well, you think pros are, it's futile to ask pros for help.
Like, really?
I just did that with someone.
Right.
So it's fucking
like,
helpful.
And I said to them, and I go, well, you could hang around Twitter or listen to some podcasts, and there's all kinds of pros giving it away for free.
Right. Right.
But
totally. That's what's up.
Yeah. No, you want to, we all want to help. It's writing, it's such a community. It's a right, like actors only understand actors, cops only understand cops, writers only understand writers. You know,
I mean,
we all want to help each other. I mean, yeah, there's a cutthroatness to this business, and there'll be three or four of us going up for the same gig and all that, but we all want each other to succeed, and we want to help. We want to find great new fresh voices and try and help them, but so often these newer writers are so bitter already, and they're so entitled, and they come in and they think like, you know, well, if you don't just give me a 10,000 an episode gig tomorrow, then you're not helping me.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's not what help's about. You know, that'd be the worst thing I could do for you.
The worst.
I mean, you know, at the same time, I think we also all want to see great material on screen.
Yeah, we do.
Because there's nothing worse than seeing like a slew of like shitty films. You're like, God damn it, why? It's like killing the, I mean, you see this stuff, it's like killing the business. Not necessarily that was a bad movie, you know, and mine is better. That's not what it is. It's like,
you know, like the 10 shitty tentpole films that come out that drive the audience away, mm-hmm. you know, which has been happening, right. you're like, what the fuck? So now...
Right. Is it, then they miss the three billboards that come out right. because then, they've all, like, they're so sick of the event stuff and they're so sick.
Not going to see anything, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like, that's what happens. Because mm-hmm. they lose faith in the... We just want everyone to be good. We want everything to be good, you know?
That's true. That's true. Well, thank y'all. Thank y'all. Go ahead.
Thank you.
I don't know if that helped or not. Or now they're gonna, you guys are gonna both leave, I mean, leave town awesome. Now and be like,
we can do Q&A all day long. But you know, shit, we just want to get a couple of them in. You know what I mean? But thank y'all for coming, Shanae. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So, Paul, where you at?
I am usually around Twitter, which is at Fizzhog.
Listen at your own
two
risk.
Two Z's and two G's. I talk a lot about writing. I talk a lot about tacos.
Not enough about dim sum. What the hell?
I talk about dim sum, yeah. That's mostly where you can find me. And I'm always, I'm pretty easy to
interact with. When's your next episode drop?
With.
Do you know yet?
Next episode of written by me.
Yeah.
I am about to leave next week. I'll go to New Orleans to shoot it. Episode 14 of this season. Okay, so cool. And it'll air late February.
Cool. That's yeah. it.
All right.
What about you, Chris?
You can get me at DerekBrothers.com, mm-hmm. Shadowboxer Cinema, or on...
Get that t-shirt, y'all. Get that t-shirt.
Yes. On Twitter.
Yeah, I'll have to check into that.
Unauthorized CBD and on Instagram. Same thing.
Cool. You guys on Twitter? Go ahead. Throw it out.
I am Aisha Casey. My Twitter handle is Aisha Boom, B-O-O-M. That's me.
Where you at, Shanae?
I don't tweet.
You don't tweet?
Well, good for you.
Are you on Instagram?
See?
I'm on Instagram. What's
that?
Oh, yeah. What's your Instagram?
My Instagram is my first name. So, Shanae the Writer.
Shanae the Writer? Mm-hmm. Good. That's what it's
at. Same thing with Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah. Instagram's great. Yeah.
I love Instagram.
I will say, Chris is one of my favorite Instagram accounts. Mm-hmm. Man, it's really... It's very cool from a cinematic place. My Instagram is mostly just like my kids are crap, but Chris is putting work in on his Instagram.
He is. I just let people know what I'm doing every once in a while. Okay, cool.
Where are you at, Hilliard?
I am at Hilliard Guess on Twitter. You guys can follow the show at ScreenwritersRR on Twitter. Any questions, ScreenwritersRantRoom@gmail.com. Is that where you hit me? You sent me an email, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. I appreciate that. ScreenwritersRantRoom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and shit like that. It's going to be a good year, 2018. It's already fuck all the Trump stuff. It's going to be good. I'm only going to get you
started. It's going to be a great year.
It's going to be a good one.
Talk about him. Jesus Christ, Mr. Stable Genius in this fucking place. I'm cursing too much.
Yes, you are. So, everybody joining me, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Wakanda.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.